Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the simple reality, and this goes back to, you know, something I've heard for years, that if lawyers had a legal case, they'd be in front of a judge. They wouldn't be in front of a microphone talking to the press. They'd be arguing their case before a judge, somebody in a robe with the power to make the choice. And when they have nothing, like the Trump administration clearly has nothing, they've lost cases, as I said earlier, across the country. So now it's, well, let's figure out the backdoor way of going. And here to share some thoughts on, well, the latest backdoor attempt to subvert the election. Again, I have to remind, 150,000 votes Trump has lost Michigan by. 150,000. It's just mind-blowing that they're still pushing here. But I've asked Jesse Lee to come talk with us. Jesse is the Vice President of Communications there at Cap Action. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
So I guess the main point for me is I don't know why Trump is still kicking and fighting in Michigan. He lost by 150,000 votes. It's not like Pennsylvania where you throw George Jorgensen out and he wins. He's got no shot in Michigan, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's just the stages of grief kind of thing, right? Getting to acceptance is going to be the hardest step in the stages of grief. But, you know, I think we've gone from a place where, they were acting like these were serious lawsuits and, you know, maybe they could run the table to, we're going to get the kind of state legislators to, you know, overturn the electors and appoint new ones. And now I think they're kind of, you know, confessing out in the open that this is actually, it's actually just a big con. It's just a con to make the kind of crowd of folks that really believes in Trump, you know, believe till their dying day that, this was stolen from him. And, you know, he really was a big winner, but, he just got cheated by the system.
Yeah, but again, Michigan's the wrong place for this. He lost by 150,000 votes. That is an enormous loss. In that state, when considering last time he won by what, like 11 or 15,000?
Yeah, well, in fairness, it's not like he's only trying in Michigan. He sent his little envoy, Lindsey Graham, to go try to bully the Georgia Secretary of State, and it sounds like he tried to bully the Arizona governor. So he's kind of turned over every rock he can. You know, I think the whole Greene County debacle where, you know, the two Republican canvassers at first, you know, refused to certify the results and then finally buckled and did, and then tried to file some kind of, you know, motion, I do declare kind of thing that, well, I didn't really mean it. Maybe Trump felt like he had a foothold there. But it was all kind of an illusion, I think. This was never going to go anywhere. You know, we actually do have systems in place to kind of deal with this. I agree. I mean, it's Michigan of all places, the idea that you would just toss out the will of the people by such a massive margin. Yeah. You know, so I think it's like 10 times what Trump won by in 2016, was always preposterous, but he just likes the noise, right? Well, it turns out they refused to certify. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, he tweets that, you know, 4 minutes after they had already buckled and agreed to certify. But like I say, this is why I think it's not about actually winning the election. It's about, you know, just creating this cloud of confusion that allows people that want to believe, that it was stolen from them, to continue believing that.
Right. But again, like I said, you know, and this will be the last point on this because I want to move on to something actually that I hope actually makes things better. But, you know, I get, you know, going after Georgia. I get going after Arizona. I even get going after Pennsylvania. But Michigan, I just don't get because there's just no path for you to in any way, shape or form throw that many votes out or challenge that many ballots. It's just not It's not feasible, but like you said, it's about the noise. It's about the illusion of someone doing something nefarious. It's about, you know, pushing that narrative, because here is a guy clearly who does not care about the rule of law, does not. And look, this isn't new. I mean, we've been going through this for the last 4 years. So if you're surprised that he's doing this, I don't know what rock you've been under for the last 4 years. This was extremely predictable. But it's one of those things where you're talking to Trump voters going, look, your guy lost. Is this the kind of future you want where we don't honor the rule of law? We don't listen to what happens at the ballot box. It's whatever dear leader wants.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll make one last point, which is, you know, I think Donald Trump's life has been kind of one giant Ponzi scheme where he's perpetually kind of losing, but then he kind of suckers in more people to kind of keep, you know, the Ponzi scheme going. And, you know, it's finally the Ponzi scheme is about to blow up. You know, it's a Bernie Madoff kind of thing where sooner or later, the whole thing kind of crashes down. And I think he's looking at that right now, and he's just like, somebody feed more money into the machine. There's got to be somewhere. Rudy Giuliani, find me something. And but it's not going to work.
Yeah. So you hit the money angle, because, again, I've had a number of listeners just go, hey, Rick, calm down. You know, this is just, as you've said, a con. This is a way to extract the last couple of bucks on the way out the door to fund his future legal problems. This is, you know, because we've all got the emails, hey, we've got a shot in Michigan, or we've got a shot in Arizona, send money. It's amazing how they've got shots, but they need all this money. There are folks who are going, that's all this really is. It's the final con of his presidency, and just kind of calm down.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I you know... Yeah, the counter argument is it seems that way now, but the truth of the matter is you could have had a few more Republican judges just provide hacky opinions as they have in the past. You could have had these canvassers go ahead and stick by their position, you know, and, you know, things could have gone worse. You know, it wasn't the craziest gamble in the world to think if we can just get to the Supreme Court,
right?
You know, they'll give it to us. You know, I Florida 2000 was a much narrower case, but, you know, it was a pretty obscene decision. You know, anytime you have to write a decision that says this decision shall not be considered precedent for any future decision, and you're the Supreme Court, you know, something's gone wrong.
Right.
So it wasn't crazy. And I mean, you know, there's now three sitting justices who were on the Florida, the Republican side of Bush v. Gore. So it wasn't, you know, cockamamie, but it just didn't pan out this time. You know, the guardrails held just a little bit too much. And, you know, I have to say, you know, you're making the point that, well, Michigan, I get these other states, but why Michigan? But, you know, the reason is Trump got beat very handily in the end. You know, he got beat very handily in the popular vote and in the Electoral College. And if that hadn't happened, if it was close, you know, like it was in 2000, you know, this thing might have gone a very different way.
No, I absolutely agree. And I said before the election, I had my vision of how things could have gone was, you know, you wouldn't have won Arizona and Nevada or Georgia. And Pennsylvania would have been the needed state. And as divided as this state is, in fact, you know, as I said, you know, Joe Biden won by 68,000 votes. Joe Jorgensen, the Libertarian candidate, pulled 78,000 votes. So it's a little bit more of, hey, if we can do some shenanigans and get it in front of the Supreme Court, who knew? But like you said, it's 306 to 232. That's a landslide electoral victory.
Well, right, exactly. Plus, you know, 7-8 million popular vote advantage. You know.
Yeah, but those are illegals.
If we don't count those.
And dead people. I'm told they're all dead people, except the one who walked in and said, "Hey, I'm not dead."
Yeah, no, it's the Walking Dead vote for sure. It's the zombies that they have to kind of write the vote.
I mean, it wouldn't. Here's the thing, and I laugh, but you know it. If it weren't actually happening, it's one of those scripts that Hollywood would never pick up. You know, not even Netflix would pick up this script. If it weren't for this administration in the last 4 years. And I'm hoping going forward that this is just one of those bad nightmares and we move forward. So in talking about moving forward, I guess first, do you think on January 20th, 2021, Joe Biden's got his hand on the Bible taking the oath and we yank Trump out and start moving forward? Do you think that happens first?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I dealt with a lot of people kind of asking this question, and you know, I spent 8 years in the wrong White House, and the thing I tell them is, you know, what happens is at noon on Inauguration Day, the Secret Service reports to Joe Biden and not Donald Trump anymore. And Donald Trump's basically a tourist walking around the White House without a visitor badge. And they'll treat him like any other visitor without a visitor badge. And they'll politely escort him out. If he prefers to go out in handcuffs, he can do that. But, you know, the Pentagon and, you know, the military and whatever, they don't have a role in this. It's just kind of, you know, basically the White House security system says, well, this guy's in, you're out, and we take our orders from him. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that'll happen. And I think, you know, one thing that, you know, I've been looking at is I think it's on Tuesday, you know, you've had all these Republican senators say, well, you know, and none of the electors have been certified. I think on Tuesday, Biden is going to hit 270 certified electoral votes. And I think things are going to look a little bit different then. You know what I mean? So, yeah, we'll see. You know, it will all be going to Thanksgiving, and then we'll come out of it. But I think Republican senators are going to have a hard time kind of sustaining the fantasy after this.
Yeah, except Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham will, like, launch impeachment proceedings against Biden, I'm sure. But, you know, I think it's the sticky wicket for them here is, you know, they've got these Georgia runoffs. And if Trump isn't ready to concede and Republican senators are kind of saying, it's over. You know, Trump has built up this giant mythology where Republican senators will be the backstabbers, right? The grand backstabbers of, you know, Trump, the champion of the people. And, you know, I think there's all those Trump voters that turned out in Georgia on Election Day. They're not going to be too excited to turn out for a couple, you know, establishment Republican senators in those special elections. And that's kind of the big dynamic here to me. That's what they're so scared of.
It's going to be interesting. And December 14th is really the final day because that's when the electors cast their ballots, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But, you know, like I say, I think even before then, even as soon as this Tuesday, you're just going to have a hard time arguing that, you know, the election's not over when there's 270 certified electoral votes haven't been passed.
That's a good start. So real quick, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on, you know, because ultimately we're not transitioning. You know, Emily Murphy has still, as I understand of this moment, not signed off. The Biden transition team isn't getting the information they need, the funding they need to move forward. It seems, again, you know, that we're setting up the next administration for chaos because right. of this temper tantrum. And I happened to watch the video of President Obama, you know, after the election saying, hey, you know, we may not like the results, but this is who we are. And I gave a very eloquent, you know, 3-minute speech inviting Trump to the White House the next day, all of that stuff. That's not happening now. You know, and I go back to the Obama thing. I go, that's who I thought we were. I look at what we are, what we're doing right now, and I'm going, I hope this isn't who we are.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to say, I was there and I worked on the transition into the Obama administration and was there to basically last day at the end of the administration. And, you know, it was on the way in, I'd have to say, you know, I'm not really one who's on board for the kind of great George W. Bush rehabilitation tour.
Right.
You know, I think that was not a good presidency. But they were earnest in trying to make the handoff as seamless as possible for the good of the country. Everybody involved would agree with that. And, you know, I was there at the end of the Obama administration where, you know, we had to watch Hope Hicks and Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner walking around the White House kind of, you know, sizing things up and licking their chops. And, you know, it was unpleasant, I would have to say. But we all did everything we could. You know, they asked us questions on how does this work, how does that work. We did everything we could to kind of, you know, give them a fighting chance. And I think Obama had a lot of kind of very genuine conversations with Trump about here's what you're going to face and, you know, here's what I'd warn you against and et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, I totally agree with what you just said, but I kind of want to make the point that, you know, it wasn't just Obama. Actually, this is kind of how it's been done, even by presidents. I didn't really quite, you know, they recognized when there was a change of power and they wanted to make the country work, even if it was going to, you know, end in some policies that weren't their preferred policy.
No, as I said, when my kids, you know, said who my favorite president is, you know, I said outside of FDR, it's John Adams. And for no other reason than the fact that he left when he lost. Right. Now, granted, he left, you know, angry in the middle of the night and all of that, but he still left. And it was, you know, to my knowledge, the first ideological change of power without bloodshed.
Right.
And for
right.
me, that right. set the precedence of what we're seeing now. And I fear that, you know, all these years later, what, 220 years later, there could be bloodshed over this. And that totally freaks me out.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, listen, if Trump was actually to be successful in kind of like getting the legislatures to overturn the electors and all that, you know, there's kind of no way to describe that except, you know, launching a civil war.
No, I mean, at the end of it, it's horrific, whatever it is. And at the end of it, we've got to not stand for it. It's that simple to me. But, Jesse, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your thoughts and your expertise. I look forward to talking to you again, my friend.
All right. Yeah, anytime. Great talking.
Good stuff. Jesse Lee, communications guru over at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.